Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, you are in for a treat. It's Hugo White. Hugo White, formerly of the Maccabees, now of 86 TVs, also guitar noodler, producer of Jamie T. We talk about it all on today's episode. And we also try and work out how long we've known each other, which is a generally always a bad thing because you just realise that, God, we're getting older. But I got to catch up with Hugo and it was lovely because one thing that we're both very passionate about is music, and so you get a very warm chat of two mates having a catch up and talking about great records. If it's your first time listening, then hello and welcome, because you're very late to the party. We've been doing this podcast for years and there's over 500 episodes. So once you get to the end of today's chat with Hugo, please go and explore that back catalogue, because I guess you, if you're fans of the Maccabees, then a few years back I had Orlando on, so you can go and listen to my chat with Orlando. And we also speak lots about the kind of, you know, the music that was going on in and around the formative years of the Maccabees and that, and all of that kind of big explosion of guitar pop. Go and check out the archives of this podcast, because so many of them bands that were sort of happening around then, I've had loads of them on. So go and explore the back catalogue of this podcast when you finish listening to my chat with Hugo. And while you're over there, why not subscribe? Because it doesn't cost anything. I'm also on all the socials. I'm not on TikTok yet because, well, I'm 50, so I've not really got much of a place over there. But you can follow Off the Beaten Track on Instagram, X, as it's now called, and Facebook. So probably the most active, I would say, on Instagram. So go give us a follow over there. And there's a Patreon, which enables you to support the podcast for less than £1 a month. It's $1 a month, and that gives you access to... we can watch all the episodes over there. I put up all the videos on the Patreon. So if you'd like to watch this chat, then head over to there and pay $1, and you can watch that. And then you can also watch an archive of 500 episodes, loads and loads of radio shows I've uploaded over there, loads of unreleased episodes. You can get it all for $1, but that dollar goes into the pot to, you know, help keep the podcast free. I think that's me done with all the kind of pre-show waffle. We can get onto the good stuff now. Ladies and gentlemen, please enjoy today's episode of Off the Beaten Track with the delightful Hugo White.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Okay, we are recording. Hugo, how are you, mate?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. I feel like we have been trying to arrange this for about a year.
When I asked you if you had got your songs ready, you was like, yeah, I sorted it a year ago. So that's how long this has took.
Amazingly, they're still pretty much the same. When I looked at them again, I was like, yeah, no, that is... I still pick those.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
I changed a couple.
Okay. Well, we've not seen each other for a long time. I guess to give this sort of conversation a little bit of context, we met probably 10 years ago through a mutual friend that is the actor Matthew Horn.
10's generous. I reckon it's longer than
it
10.
It probably was, mate. I tell you, the first time I met you, you'd done a secret gig for the second album, for the Maccabees second album.
Right, yeah.
333. So how long ago was that?
Which is, what's the second album? The third album was 2012, so second album's, 2000. Oh, God, I don't know.
So we're looking a good 12 years ago then.
Yeah.
Okay.
I remember that show. I remember it.
And then obviously in that time, the Maccabees went on to achieve so much, and then you've disbanded, and then you've all gone and done other things, and you're here now with your new band, with Felix and Will. And so we'll get into that. But let's start right at the very beginning, and I want to kick off your playlist with the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro, please.
Okay. Well, I've chosen this is a recent thing, really, because firstly, I'm going to go and see him tonight. Okay. So it's Green Day, a song called Good Riddance.
Yep.
But I'm excited about seeing him because I've never seen him. I used to love him when I was a kid. And then, they're playing Electric Ballroom, which is going to be amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a good place to go and see Green Day for the first time.
I did see they played a little pub as well last night, apparently.
Last night, in Covent Garden, I think they did. Yeah. Pub in Covent Garden. Of recently, I've been listening with my kid who's 5 now, and we started listening to Green Day because he just seems to love like pop punk, that's kind of connects with him. And, Good Riddance. We were listening to that in the car, and because it does this at the start of it, it's like an acoustic guitar, and it's like a full start. I think there's two like full starts, and then he starts playing, and it's the acoustic song. And but in between, I'd never noticed it until I listened with him, but because we had it so loud in the car after the full start, after the second full start, you just hear him go "fuck" like that. We've now in this loop of like listening to that song and just cranking the intro up, just hearing him say "fuck" and watching my kid's face every time. And I like the idea that it's kind of like you're not allowed to swear, but in music, you can get away with it. Like it's all right if we listen to music, you can sing the song, so you can say it there. I love that at the moment.
So I want to ask you about intros and the way that the people sort of get their music now and consume their music. If we look at when, you started with the Maccabees, the way that people were listening to music was very different then. People were still going out and buying CDs and we've now seen the sort of explosion of Spotify into this kind of all-consuming beast, and we're also seeing things like TikTok are becoming quite important for artists to kind of get their music out there, and also artists like heritage artists to kind of have rejuvenated careers because one of their songs has gone a bit crazy on TikTok, which is quite surreal. But both of those things, both TikTok and Spotify, it feels that the generations that are coming through, and I'm generalising here, Hugo, that the attention spans are smaller, and there's lots of songs that seem to be starting with choruses. And yeah, I guess I'm leaning more towards sort of more commercial pop music. And fine tuning that almost the science of creating a pop record. I just wonder, with 86 TVs, does any of that stuff filter through into your creative process?
It's interesting. I think with the band, with 86 TVs, I think we're still making music that we kind of based on it's not coming based on that world. And we're kind of hoping that still leaning into that, there still is people still want that,
Yeah.
So there isn't a thing to massively cut stuff down. Although you know, even with singles and stuff, I think, you know, radio don't really play singles unless they're 3 minutes, you know.
Okay.
And so, like, any, you can't, I mean, even our latest single, Higher Love, which is 4.5 minutes, and we had to do a edit, the radio edit's like just over three minutes, which is quite a lot of a song to take out.
Do you feel you're like that's compromising?
I mean, I think it still works, actually, that one. But it's kind of not compromising because the song on Spotify and stuff, it exists, which is where most people, I guess, listening to it. Sometimes it would be, but with that song, I think we get away with it. But, you know, and we did actually did a version. We did a TV Sunday brunch, like played live on that, and we had to do it in 2:30.
So it's
like 4.5 minute song in 2:30. I mean, it still worked somehow, but
It sounded like you were playing it hard and fast, though.
Yeah. Played it really fast, and so I don't know. I'm not opposed to that. I think you have to, as a band, be flexible, especially in this sort of day and age with stuff like that. But in terms of writing music, I don't think we think about that. But I do think, I mean, even the Beatles, you listen to all those Beatles records, and they all started with a chorus, and they were quick songs, and they, so it's kind of not a new thing, I think. But yeah, how it plays into it's strange, that stuff. I mean, because people are writing verses that just get picked up, you know, you just pick up a verse and on a TikTok or whatever, and it just becomes this huge thing, and the rest of the song is kind of almost irrelevant to it because how successful that verse is.
It's crazy.
I always found that recently that not even that recently, but that Sam Fender song, which is I've forgotten the name of it now.
17 Going Under.
Yeah, that one. I always felt like that was, it's like the second verse in it is amazing lyrically. It's like
I was
that,
far too scared to hit him, but I'd hit him in a heartbeat now. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's and so that, weird. It's so
I heard
weird.
That verse so much because that was it was enough.
Yeah.
So when you heard it in that thing, you're like, it's just such a good verse. And in this day and age, it's like that verse can change your whole thing because so many people are exposed to just that bit.
That's so crazy you say that, right? Because I still DJ at the Pink Toothbrush, and we still are smashing out, you know, in a world where the indie club seems to be dying, we're still smashing it out. And when we play that Sam Fender track, that line, everyone sings it 10 times louder than the rest of the song.
Yeah,
so strange, isn't it? It's a great little lyric, and it nails it perfectly. But it is strange, isn't it, Harry? It's the first, the first part of the second verse, not the first, you know, beginning of the song or the chorus. But there's something magical about that, I think.
And that probably is a bit of the this day and age. Maybe it's had more exposure than the rest of the song. Degree, although I'm sure, you know, the whole song's great, but it's you know, maybe that's further ingrained.
Absolutely
great lyric. it's crazy. I mean, that I recently, over the last few years anyway, this a track I produced for a guy called Matt Maltese, it's called As the World Caves In, and it was at the time, it was maybe 5 years ago now that we made the track, and that he was on a major label, released the track. It didn't really, I'd done a few things with him, but it didn't really take off. I think we thought we'd made something unbelievable, and it was just like, you know, this was just the beginning of like such a huge.
I thought it was great.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I mean, I think it is great, but there was like, it didn't take off. Yeah. I think it made people panic in the label, and they didn't feel like it wasn't sort of pop enough, maybe, or it didn't have it didn't connect as it could. And I think he was dropped from the label after that record. And then he carried on making great music. But something happened with TikTok and like a section of that or someone covered it, and it just went mad viral. Like it's just, and it had, I think now it's on like 350 million plays on Spotify. Wow. It's just like absolutely, I mean, it's kind of like, I still check it against things that I'm like, so like huge, like, I think of the biggest songs that I know or of things. Yeah. check and go and check how many plays they've had, and it's like 300 million is a lot of plays for
that's ridiculous.
And that stemmed from a TikTok cover. And it just kind of carried on and fed back into his thing, you know, and has put him in an amazing place as well.
That's amazing.
Okay,
I'm gonna take you back. First song that you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please?
So for this, I've chosen Blur, The Universal, which was, I had like a nanny at the time, and she was looking after us after school or something, and she brought us, maybe it was for my birthday, but she brought me a tape of The Universal, and I just have that memory of like, not, I didn't at that age, I didn't know who Blur were, I didn't really have the context of that, and just remember it feeling, because it's all this, the strings that start it, and it's quite a sophisticated song, and it's all in its own world, and I just remember listening to that and just being transported, really, and that was and being like so intrigued by the world it lived in as music, that it just kind of, that thing of, you know, like having a tape and it having a whole world in it that you could kind of couldn't, it was just some sort of magic, really.
So that was
the first time I remember seeing music as like this sort of piece of magic that you just couldn't work out. I don't know, maybe you're kind of drawn to it, maybe drawn to how that was possible or what that was.
If you had to sort of pinpoint the emotion, what was it?
That's really hard. That's really hard. I don't actually know what that emotion is. Don't know.
It's wonderful, isn't it? When you
it's just beautiful and uplifting, and so it kind of came from somewhere else, you know, that's what it felt like, although, you know, essentially it wasn't from that far away.
Yeah.
But and that kind of made, I only sort of found out later, but we made the first Maccabees record with Stephen Street, who I found out made that record.
Yeah.
And actually still, and then 86 TVs, we've been working with Stephen again.
Amazing.
So there's a sort of nice theme to that, really, that's kind of, that he's been involved in a lot of music that I've made. And
You mentioned sort of, you know, the nanny got you that tape when you was very young. Where was growing up? Where was home then? And how musical was home growing up?
So we were in South London, and musically, we grew up listening to, you know, Beatles tapes in the car and Van Morrison, and so we kind of always listened to a lot of great music. I mean, and that had lots of, you know, we would sing the whole Beatles records in the back of the car, me and my brothers, and know all the words, know as soon as, you know, the first, know what the first note of the next track would be, yeah, type thing. So we listened to a lot of music. My dad, not a musician, but loved music. And my mum had previously played guitar. There was a guitar in the house that was hers.
Yeah.
I never saw her play, but, and then my dad's side of the family, in Isle of Wight, one of his brothers was a musician, and he, had made a record when we were about, I was probably about 6 years old or something. And he made, his first album, and gave us a CD of his album, and, you know, it was a picture of him on the front cover, and it was like, and we kind of obsessed over his album for a long time, me and my brothers. And it kind of, more recently, thinking back on it, we see it as like that kind of obsession with that record was almost like it made it seem possible to us.
That's so important, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, because it was like, because our uncle did it. He made an album, you know? And I think, yeah, that those little things that are like, they just give you, without you knowing it, they make it feel like it's possible to do that. You can do that. It's not just something other people do.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me about the song that reminds you of your time at school, please, Hugo.
So that I've gone for, do you know the Bouncing Souls?
Mm-hmm.
A song called Kate Is Great, which is I still listen to it a lot. And I don't know a huge amount about the band, but it was, you know, my school life was really, I still see it as it was like I had a life outside of school. So I sort of had a lot of friends. Through riding BMX, basically, I'd kind of met riding a bike on the common, and kind of met and other kids riding bikes on the common, and we'd kind of formed this like group of people that rode bikes that were all kind of living out. Yeah, you know, we'd get home from school and get on our bikes and go and see who was on the common on the bike, yeah. and that kind of led into that for years and years. That was all I was interested in, really, BMXing, and we built a dirt jumps on the common and kind of lived our life on our bikes, and watching BMX videos was the thing, and this song was in a BMX video. I can't remember which video it was, but it kind of feels like a soundtrack to a lot of that.
It's so strange, the amount of...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
P- people that have come on this podcast over the years, Hugo, and from kind of my generation down to I guess your generation, to I guess it sort of maybe stopped around the time of the sort of DVD exploding, but that will go, oh, I first heard that on a skate video or a BMX video.
Oh, yeah.
And just having them VHSs that were being passed around, and it was like, fuck, what's this song? And like, so many people have referenced like them videos that having that kind of huge impact on them. First time I ever heard Sonic Youth was on a skate video, and I was like, what is this? And like,
amazing. I love that you can still see the visuals as well. When you hear the song, it kind of comes along with what was happening. That was, I guess that was a way of discovering music as well. Because it was one of the, I guess they were almost kind of always, they were always soundtracked, weren't they, with music. But that's that song as well. We later on in the Maccabees, we start actually, well, early on in the Maccabees, we toured America supporting Bloc Party with the Noisettes as well, who now Jamie Morrison, who's the drum, who was the drummer in the Noisettes, is now in 86 TV. We were playing in New Jersey, which is like Springsteen's hometown, and we had, it was unbelievable. It was just amazing, that whole day. I remember it. But after, we went to a bowling alley and with everyone, a Bloc Party and Noisettes, and it was like this really cool, like old sort of 60s bowling alley, and everything was just, it was, we were in America and we were 19. It was like, and the someone was like, oh yeah, bands play here, you know, Bouncing Souls played here, and we were talking to the like bar lady or the in the bowling alley, and she was like, and I was going, I love Kate is great, like Kate is great, and she was like, that's Kate over there. And it turns out Kate is the singer's mum.
Wow.
And she was like, so I met Kate.
That's so cool.
Good, yeah.
So
I was made up.
When did you park up the BMX and pick up a guitar then?
I was still playing. We started a band. I was 16. I was still kind of, my main thing was BMX, and that's what I do. And at that time, I still sort of saw myself as, that was what I was gonna do, ride BMX, and I started playing in the band, and I'd broken my arm a couple of times, and it kind of got to the point where it was like, with the band, it felt like that stuff just wasn't, they don't go together.
Yeah.
So, you know, like having a broken wrist is not, doesn't work if you want to be playing guitar. And then really the band just kept moving, you know, it had such a momentum at that time, and I think that just sort of overtook, really. But quite happy with that. But I did, and then I've still got BMX.
We'll
take it down to the racetrack.
Love it. Did you enjoy school?
I sort of sometimes think I did. I have good memories from it to a degree, but I sort of have bad memories. I mean, when I was 16, so a lot of things happened at the same time, really. But my mum died when I was 16, so just before I was doing GCSEs, I think, just before I had to do GCSEs. And so it's all a really strange time for me, that, you know, especially looking back on it, like how much, like dealing with all of that and how you sort of process that while going to school, you know, and having, you know, people being on your back about doing exams and And I feel like I'm, you know, yeah, I felt the school I was at, I didn't feel that supported looking back on it as at the age I was. And so there's a lot of stuff there actually where I didn't, and it probably leads into that thing of like having a life outside school and my friends outside of school would people that I could just be myself with and kind of escape. And I felt a bit trapped in school,
yeah,
with that stuff. But and all of it, you know, that was around the same time we started the band, and it kind of the focus of, I think that extreme focus in starting up, because you have to have that when you're starting a band, and you know, we had such kind of drive and almost escapism as well, because it wasn't running away, but it was creating a world that you could focus on and live in and get moving, you know, and I think the band did that, you know.
Okay. Tell me the first song you remember buying from a record shop, please.
With this, I've actually chosen the first song that Felix brought from the record shop.
Okay.
Which is Eternal, Power of a Woman. I distinctly remember him coming back with it on tape and being so pleased with his choice that he'd got Power of a Woman. So that was my first memory of the record. And then not long after, he brought me Hey Macarena on CD.
You're really throwing Felix under the bus here, aren't you, mate? Not once, but twice.
I know. Yeah. I've still got Hey Macarena. I don't know why he chose that for me, but he did. So, yeah.
Oh, fantastic. I mean, as you got older and your taste developed, how important was like the record shop for you growing up? Was it somewhere you'd go and sort of hang out, or was you kind of more sort of touched with that sort of Napster generation of sort of the first early sort of MP3s and downloads?
Yeah, that was kind of just after. I think there was, I guess there was that. I still to a degree had that record shop experience, but I remember there was a record shop near me called Is Records or something like that. I don't think it lasted that long, but they did like had loads of weird bootleg stuff, and I used to buy like Bob Dylan bootlegs and stuff from there. But probably not that long after, all the kind of like MP3 world started to begin. But I did buy records. We would have been CDs, for quite a while.
Where are you at of it now?
With buying records, I don't buy many records, really. I buy records of people I know, or, you know, kind of go out to support, but and I have a collection of vinyls that have been, you know, that I will occasionally add to if I find something special, but not really new. Don't buy new music like that.
Yeah.
Which is quite weird, but that's just how, you know, listen to stuff on Spotify.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you should stress as well, it's really fucking expensive buying records.
It really is. Yeah. It really is. I like going into record shops, but again, it's like, it's an expensive hobby, that buff, it'd be nice to say, no, I still go and buy all my records, but I don't.
Yeah, you're not alone, mate. You're not alone. Okay. Well, I guess most of the times that we've spent in each other's company has generally been in in clubs that, that me and Matt were doing, where you and Felix and had come and DJ, and then you also come and DJ for me and Pip at the book club well. And so it's fitting that we moved to track five then. And I'm going to ask you to tell me the song that soundtracked your year's clubbing, please, Hugo.
I found this one really difficult because there are so many songs in that time. I think the time I'm thinking of really is that like early kind of that indie world, really, when Maccabees, probably around the time Maccabees had moved to Brighton and just before we got a record deal, and we were kind of just playing shows all the time, and everything seemed to be an indie club night, and it was just, that was the world we were in, and it was. And there were so many bands that were massively inspiring, and it kind of kept switching between. And it felt like there were so many guitar bands at that time. And you know, every month there'd be a new guitar band with this new song that was just undeniable. And, you know, that became the song. And then there's the greats of that time, what with like... Interpol and the Strokes and Kings of Leon, that felt like they were the heavyweights, you know. And then but I've chosen Futureheads. I'll go with Hounds of Love just because of what it had at that time, and I think they were one of the bands that definitely defined a time really strongly for us. And we loved the Futureheads and seeing them live. And I just thought Barry was such an amazing front man.
Yeah.
And his voice, every vocal he delivered is so good. And it kind of, he had such an energy and like, and as a band, they were just interesting and, Futureheads, and they had loads of great songs, and we ended up playing with them a bunch, and he made a record, Barry made a solo record a few years ago that's so good.
I've not heard that.
It's like a piano vocals really, and it's it's really, really powerful. And I think, and he did an article about it where it kind of goes through like his struggles with, I can't remember exactly, but like kind of mental health things, and the record really kind of like feels like it somehow puts all those things together, and, it's just and it has all the kind of bites that he had back in that time with the early Futureheads, but it's still there in a very different form, and I love that.
Oh, check that out. I've not heard that.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, if I have to think of, as you know, looking at this question, you know, I've been a club promoter for 30 years now, Hugo, and there was a moment, and I've got a photo of it as well. I don't know if I've mentioned this to you before, but Matt and I launched our night in Brighton, and it was the night of the NME tour, I think, and you've all come down to DJ, and I've got this photo, and it's you and Felix DJing, and me and Matt are standing there, like, watching. I don't know who took the photo, and in the middle of the dance floor, you can see the drums. The band, the drums, and Big Pink, I believe.
Maybe
were Bombay Bicycle Club on that tour?
They were, yeah. They're
all, and you're playing Dirty Diner. And they're all losing their shit to it. And it's an amazing photograph. I've got this really cool black and white photograph of it somewhere. It's a cracker. I'll dig it out.
I'd love to see that. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
That was great.
Wonderful.
Yeah, that was... We probably did Brighton Dome.
You'd done the Dome that night, that's right.
Yeah. They were great, those tours.
Yeah.
Because there's so many people on it. And
planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Yeah, it was wicked. That was a great night.
I'm going to take you home for track six. A favourite song from an artist from your home county, please.
So for this, I'm going to choose Jamie T, a song called St. Christopher, which was a B-side to Sticks and Stones EP, I think. And it's a really lo-fi song, really, that which was always the thing that Jamie did so well in the early demos of his, that are just, it's just, I don't know why, because Jamie's from South London as well, and that song, yeah, just still is something that it's up there with one of my favorite songs. And it's I love songs that are kind of off the path of, you know, B-sides or just the odd song that's not the main one, you know. And it's beautiful. Yeah, it really is. It's like there's something about it. And I actually got him to, I don't think he'd played it for a long time when I was working with him, and I was like, play me some Christopher, and he was like I don't remember how to play that. And then the next day he came back in and he'd learnt it for me, and he just played me the whole song.
Wonderful.
In like perfect form. And it's just, yeah.
So how did like your relationship with Jamie come about? Because we've seen you sort of share the stage, you come on at Glastonbury with the Maccabees, was it? Yeah, that was maybe on the last record, wasn't it, that he come on that year? Mark to Prove It, he come on and sung, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And then obviously you've been playing guitar with Jamie as well. So how did that kind of relationship come about, and then you end up working on his records and stuff?
So, we toured together early Maccabees days, so we supported him. I mean, all around that time, we'd go and see it, because that was when he'd started out with, he'd just play bass guitar and somehow had this, every time he'd play, you'd go and it'd just be like this kind of frenzy of people that knew all these songs that hadn't been released. And so we all from immediately knew that he was one of the most, like, he had something really unique within that world that we were in. And then when his first record came out, actually, we saw him. That was the first time we met him. We were playing in Brighton somewhere, like, can't remember the venue, but we played a show, and there's the downstairs room was like a drum and bass night or something, and he was MCing, and he came up after we played, and came up to us, to me and Fee, and we had a chat, and he loved the band, and he's like, that's like, I want to start a band, I want to get like a band together and all that, and then when he made that first record, that he invited us on tour with him, so we did a UK tour at the kind of like height of excitement for him, yeah, on that record, and then we just sort of kept in touch really, and I've always just that. The first and second Jamie records were probably the biggest like influence, or just records that really stuck with me in that time. Yeah. And so I've always seen him as a bit of a hero of that era. And he started playing with us. He played the last Maccabees show. He did Marks to Prove It with us then. And actually at that show, so we were splitting up, and he'd come play with us. And I remember at soundcheck, he came up to me and he was like, I want to have a chat with you about production. I was like, he sort of saw his thing. He's like, okay, so, because he loved Marks to Prove It, which I produced the record. And he's like, I want to have a chat about production. And then that conversation just led in. I reckon when Maccabees split up, he was like, right, that means you can come and do my record. we did that, and then really it's just a friendship, like playing with him. He basically was kind of like, it's kind of an open invitation every time I play, come and play. So it's amazing to do that. And then he took us on tour, 86 TVs last year. So we did our first tour supporting him, which was a massive, it's so helpful for the band, because we'd made this record that we hadn't played to anyone, and we hadn't really done any gigs. I think we'd done one show. And when we got up, because they were big venues, you know, and just being thrown in the deep, I don't think anyone else would have offered the band that had no music out, no, like a main support on a big tour like that, and actually just throwing ourselves into that. I think we really quickly learned like how the band was going to work live, and really made us develop quickly, because we were playing Alexandra Palace to like a full Alexandra Palace, you know, with no songs that anyone knew, and I think it made us really quickly kind of lock it all down and figure out exactly what it was live and make it work in that context, and so it's been a massive help that, and starting this band.
Can I ask you about confidence? Because in any time I've had any interaction with you, you've been very calm, always super kind, and very, come across very laid back. How is it, you know, whether it be in the Maccabees, whether it's been, you know, you're saying walking out on Ali Pally, supporting Jamie T, to, you know, these huge, you know, festival stages. Like, are you a confident person when you walk on stage?
Within the context of the band and music, I think I am. But I wouldn't walk on, I wouldn't be confident walking out and giving a speech. That stuff terrifies me, you know, speaking or those things, really, like I'm not that sort of person, you know. But I think I've always, with music, I've found it and especially with bands, I've always been in bands and always kind of like formed a group, you know, that and I think it's always that thing of, if it's something that you're like if it's your world, you know, it's like if you're playing your music, it's kind of like it's kind of like a force field for that stuff, because you know you believe in it, and that's that makes it possible. But the, you know, if you asked me to read out a paragraph of a book to 50 people, I'd be terrified.
Is there some comfort as well when you stand on stage, and certainly now, and you're looking either side and there's like a wall of whites? Is that like, is that kind of nice to know that you got your brothers, like, you know, either side of you? Obviously, you know, at Felix and the Maccabees, but having, you know, the positioning of the band now, having all three of you up front of the stage, looks fucking great, by the way. Does it feel good knowing, like, that this is, you know, this is the family doing this?
It really does, yeah. I think it's an amazing... I'm still sort of yet to process that, really, because we've been working on this for a long time, really, like, developing it and even just finding the balance of making it work between us and playing to each other's strengths and dynamically dealing with it, with the balance of it all. And having our main thing of the focus of making music together, and actually, it's such a dream thing, you know. If that would have been the kind of, it would have been it when we were 16 or whatever, starting to do a band, the three of us. And obviously Jamie, he's a big part of it, but us three brothers to be playing together and actually completely create this together is like kind of beyond. It's kind of hard to actually process how much that means, I think. It's been amazing. It's an amazing thing to be all these years on and kind of closer than ever with my brothers, you know.
Well, I mean, let's talk about the name of the band as well, because the first conversation I ever had with you, I was telling you about how much I love the band I Am Clute, and we was talking about how we love that band. And you know, I knew that you were obviously working on something, and then when I just see 86 TVs, I was like, fuck, man, what a name.
I love the name, and I think we didn't have a name for a long time. We'd actually made the record that we made a 20 track album without a name, and it was still like in the back of everyone's mind, like, this is gonna come down, come down to the wire here, because we're gonna need a name because we can't do anything. And that name, there'd been lots of names around, but that had been in there early. I think I put that one in there early. I was like, I don't know why, there was some sort of draw to it. I just thought it was, I don't know, 86 TVs, it just looks cool as well.
It looks
different. It's like, it stands out. And the best, even better, is that it has massive meaning to us, because that, again, back to when we were 16, that was I Am Clute with the band that we would go and see, and we would all go and we'd stand at the front of the gig, like we'd stand in front of Johnny Bramwell for the whole gig. Like, I remember him handing me the set list after the show and stuff, like, as I was standing in front of him. And I think as in terms of songwriting, his songs were the ones that just were the most powerful to us, you know. So there was some sort of magic involved in that, in his writing, and them as a band, so I think, there's some sort of synchronicity about that they were the songs we really connected over, and 86 TVs, kind of stayed.
Wonderful. Before I ask you the last question, I touched on confidence there, and you've from the time you left school, you've pursued a career in one of the hardest industries to achieve success in, and you've achieved success for many, many, many years and continue to do so. Are you driven? Hugo? I mean, if so, what drives you?
Yeah. What drives me? I don't know. I feel like it's hard to say because it's what I've always done, creating stuff, making stuff, and although it doesn't always see result, it feels like it doesn't. And I think that's how a lot of people would see it. The amount you have to put in before you start seeing any, especially if you're talking financially or whatever, like in how people generally work, you know, because even, you know, with the Mac, it's like it's hard to quantify what you put into it before it becomes something that's in any way stable.
Yeah.
It's all your time, it's all your thinking, it's everything is about keeping pushing that thing and creating for that. And it doesn't always have the, there is no guarantee that you can make it stable. And but I think, I don't know what that is, because it's not like I don't have a sort of an inbuilt, I don't feel like I can sort of rest on my extreme talent, you know. It's like I just graft, you know, like just keep working at stuff. And so the drive to do it again with a band, I mean, which is kind of insane after Maccabee stuff, to go to start a band again, especially in the climate of how difficult it is being a band. And it looks, if you sort of look at it on paper, you know, the idea of like, I'm 37, you know, like starting a band from nothing, is just like, it's kind of like, yeah, we've got a family now and all that stuff. Like, it's not really, but there's just, I can't, maybe didn't see another, it's just natural. I don't know. It's just a natural thing. I was actually going to ask you about, because you, recently I've been getting into cold water swimming.
Oh, really?
I remember seeing some videos of you.
Yeah, I've been doing that for years. It's one of my favourite things to do. Yeah.
Nuts.
You're a bit young for a midlife crisis, Hugo. What's going on, mate?
man, it's like, it's quite, but that sort of stuff, like, because it feels extreme. Like at the moment, and it's painful. And
the
it's
moment,
like,
that's the key though. You're in that moment. Nothing else matters at that point.
It's
all encompassing. Like, that's the best part.
And that's like, there's a sort of addiction to it, or like that extreme thing, I don't know. But those sort of things like that, although in many different forms, I've always been sort of quite an addictive personality with stuff that's like even with BMX.
I was going to say the parallels there, you know.
Yeah.
That kind of adrenaline is there, isn't it, in BMXing and obviously music and jumping in ice cold water. Less chance of breaking your arm in there, though, mate.
Yeah, exactly. Nice and gentle. Maybe there's something in that, being drawn to those things.
Okay.
Yeah.
Last track, and this is when you get to be a tastemaker or influencer, as the kids call it. And I want to know a song that you think many may not know that you would like them to hear, please.
So this is a song, it's an odd song. Not many people, I feel like not many people have heard it. No one I really suggest it to has heard it, but everyone always loves it when you play it. And it's, we had a guitar tech, a good friend, we've kind of got this thing where he'll always send me songs and they'll always be interesting and odd and different. And this song is by a guy called Jackie Levin, who's a Scottish guy. He's not alive anymore. The song's called The Sexual Loneliness of Jesus Christ. And it's just like, one of the thing that immediately happens when you listen to that is he wobbles his voice. So he sings with like a really like extreme wobble to his voice, but you very rarely hear that.
Yeah.
But it is like addictively amazing. It's a good song. You should listen to it.
I will. Well, people can go and explore it, because I put together a little Spotify playlist to accompany the podcast with all of your song choices. Yeah. And obviously we'll put some of your work that you've done over the years, and obviously we'll put the two tracks that are available for A6TV. So second single, I Love's Out Now.
Yeah.
What's coming next? What's happening?
So I don't know what there is. There's no dates announced of stuff, but there's more music coming starting next year. There's a tour in March, UK tour, and then there's an album coming next year, let's say.
Fantastic.
In trouble. but the record's made. We're in the studio at the moment, and we have this sort of never-ending stream of songs that we need to work through, that so we're continuing with that. And because I think that's the thing, because we all write songs where they begin individually, and having three people writing songs, it's just like, it only takes, you know, you write three songs and suddenly you've got nine songs to get through. Yeah. As a band. And it's so our main problem at the moment is like limiting how many songs that we have.
I mean, that's a good problem to have, isn't it?
Yeah. It should. I mean, hopefully that will serve us well doing album two. But we got 20. We'll have 23 songs going into this album, which isn't only going to be probably 12 songs like every other album.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of music.
Oh, fantastic. And if people want to keep up to speed with tour dates and album releases and such, where's the best place to keep up to speed with the band?
I imagine that Instagram, website, whatever the kids do. I mean, our TikTok's probably not looking great, but which we are trying. We are trying.
Yeah.
And then my personal one for production stuff and whatever.
Yeah. Okay, well, if it's cool with you, we'll tag the band in all the socials when this comes out, so if people aren't following you, they can go and do so from there. Hugo, it's always an absolute joy catching up and talking to you, mate.
I wish you
all the success with the band. It's just great to hear music from yous again, and it's sounding fucking awesome at the moment, and I can't wait to hear the record. And absolutely.
Well, thanks, man. Thanks. It's great. I love chatting to you.
I'm gonna press stop. Don't go anywhere. There you go. Oh, wonderful, wonderful. It's so nice to have a little catch up. If you enjoyed that episode, which if you didn't, then you're listening to the wrong podcast, because that was an absolutely beautiful chat. And why not go and explore the back catalogue? Because we spoke about, obviously, Block Party on there. You can go and listen. I think it was the second ever episode of this podcast, 490, however many episodes ago, had Russ from Block Party on. That was a wonderful chat. Also had former Maccabees front person Orlando. We've had Orlando on Off the Beaten Track, so go check that out. All of that kind of era of bands that we was talking about, that sort of big explosion of indie guitar pop, so many of them have been guests over the years on this podcast, so go check out the archives. And if it was your first time listening, hello. You was very late to the party. We're over 500 episodes in, so you've got a load of catching up to do. So go and get stuck in. Why not head over to Spotify and check out the playlist that I've put together featuring all of Hugo's choices and obviously much of the work that Hugo's put out throughout his career. Other than that, I could tell you about the website. That's your one-stop shop for everything. So if you need to find out, you know, where you can buy merch, where you can find out about the Patreon, where you can find out all the different platforms that we host this on, just go to Off the Beat and Track. That's Off the Beat and, not beaten, Off the Beat and Track podcast.com. Thanks again to Hugo for giving up his time. Thanks again to you lot for listening and supporting this podcast. I'll be back next time. In the meantime, be nice to one another. I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.